The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Good morning and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show here on 1310 KFKA. We are live this morning. I'll get that out right away. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University. And I'm here, as usual, with Jim Salnier, also a certified financial planner, who's still looking things up on his computer.
Good morning.
Good morning. I can't hear you, but we'll pretend that other people can.
How come you can't hear me?
Well, maybe it's just me. Can other people hear him?
I can hear him.
Oh, okay. Perfect. It is just me. Pete. Peter Scott is also here, our estate planning attorney. It's not our personal estate planning attorney, but
your favorite
estate planning attorney. And we are live this morning on January 23rd, 2016, here in the studio. That means we can take your calls, your phone calls, with questions, answers, snide remarks,
comments.
We also would be happy to take your email. So if you want to call us, the phone number is 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310, depending on your preference there. You can also email us live on the show if you don't want to speak to us for some reason. Email address would be jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. And Jim's got his handy-dandy iPad open, so we can
I do. I'm looking for the email that someone sent that I was going to talk about, but I can't find it.
Mm. Does this fall in the show prep category? Is it impossible to have your headphones on while you are going through your emails? Because if something urgent, like some kind of urgent broadcast comes over the headphones, you'll miss it.
Yes.
I could still hear you perfectly.
No, not from me. What if it came? What if Adrian had to talk to you?
Well, if you all of a sudden started panicking and ran out of here, I'd follow.
I'm actually very surprised you're not wearing a Patriots hoodie.
I was going to, but I didn't want all the hassles from the rather
the hassles
boisterous Broncos fans.
Mm.
So I'm incognito.
So you have your Patriots underwear on.
Maybe.
Is that what you mean?
Maybe.
Underoos?
I was going to wear my Patriots mm-hmm. bling. If I go out for breakfast tomorrow, I usually wear it every Sunday. Mm-hmm. But again, the Broncos fans are being a little bit testy. So
you get harassed when you wear your Patriots gear?
Mm-hmm.
Really? More than just in the studio here?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Huh.
After we won the Super Bowl last year, I was in the card aisle of Safeway mm-hmm. buying a Valentine's Day card for my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And someone pushing a baby carriage started accosting me, saying the Patriots, let's just say a certain word that begins with an S and rhymes with luck. And
is that because they were cheating again?
They weren't cheating. We won that Super Bowl fair and square.
Was that coming from the mouths of the person in the baby carriage?
No, just the father pushing the baby carriage.
Oh, okay. I see. But he didn't actually accost you with the carriage.
No.
Okay. Well, that's good.
But I was like, dude, chill out. It was a game, and you're pushing a kid.
Well, he's clearly venting his frustrations.
Yes.
You do make yourself a target because you are – there's not a lot of Patriots – fans roaming the aisles at the grocery store around here. There are some. Have you found do you ever go to a Patriots bar where they all gather together?
Well, it's funny you mention that. I was at the Boulder Chamber of Commerce business after hours this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a woman there, a very nice woman. Can't remember her name.
I'll never forget
Maria.
What's her name.
Maria. That was her name. Very nice woman named Maria. And turns out she was from Massachusetts as well. And huge Patriots fan. And I had been on a hike a little over a year ago, and someone told me, heard me talking about the Patriots, said there was a bar in Boulder owned by someone from Boston around Pearl Street, and they watch all Boston baseball and football. And I've never found this bar. It's like the Yeti. You hear about it, but I've never found it.
Well, it has to, it's behind an unmarked door, and there's a secret knock you have to use.
I have Googled Boulder, Pearl Street, Boston, sports, everything. I can't find it. So I'm talking to Maria, and she tells me, she says, did you know there's a bar on Pearl Street? And I said, where? She said, I don't know. I've heard about it. And she doesn't know where it is either. And now I'm wondering if people are just screwing with Patriots fans, telling them there's a bar in Boulder on Pearl Street.
It's all a baiting tactic to get people in Patriots gear to start wandering aimlessly up and down Pearl Street to be accosted by people in pushing baby carriages. That's what it is.
So we decided we would try to find this bar someday. By
you
walking up and down Pearl Street.
Hand in hand?
No,
no, in your Patriots gear?
No, no. Well, she won't go to games either. She went to when they were here in November. She had tickets, and she said she told me she gets all decked out. She actually had a Patriots tattoo on her ankle. Mm-hmm. Her phone had a Patriots stat page, whatever. You know, when you turn on the phone, it was a Patriots helmet. And she puts those little black things under her eyes with the little Patriots emblem on them. Oh, she said she was big time harassed at the game, and she didn't enjoy it.
A little thin-skinned, I guess.
Well, no. Sometimes the fans can get a little bit. I don't get that, whether it's Broncos fans on Patriots or, you know, you hear sometimes even
or
of
Oakland
these
fans.
Oakland fans. And you hear sometimes even at baseball games, fans getting beat up because they're for the other team. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's
that's
a game.
Ridiculous.
It's
I think
a game. Some, just have fun.
I think some jibing back and forth is
I think
to
it has
expected.
To do with the alcohol being served at games, but I don't know.
That could.
So anyways, this woman, Maria, heard the same story of this alleged bar. If anyone listening in Boulder, I know we probably don't pull in many Boulder listeners. If there is such a bar somewhere, and maybe it isn't even on Pearl Street. Maybe both stories got the bar wrong on the street. But allegedly there is a bar somewhere in Boulder owned by a Boston fan. And it's all – you just go there and it's all Boston stuff. Hmm. I'm wondering if like I could walk in and people would yell, Jim!
Kind of
like
would,
Norm.
Yeah.
Probably not on your first visit. But you could probably create that.
Everyone would know your name.
Like. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it. That's one of the reasons why I don't have all my Patriots garb on. But I will be watching the game tomorrow, and may the best team win.
Thank you.
I didn't say may
the best. That's so nice. It's very gracious of you.
Yes.
So we'll see next week what the deal is.
Okay, I apologize to this gentleman. I cannot find his email. He was thanking us. It was one of the email questions that we answered. He was thanking us for the very good answer and that we were pretty spot on with – we had to assume a lot about –
We had to assume
about,
some things.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This was the gentleman who was from – I believe it was Oregon. I'm not quite sure. Remember? Mm-hmm. And we called him George, of course. But he was describing his situation. He had a
– he's holed up in some federal buildings
in a wildlife area. Yes. Well, no. He's not one of them.
Oh.
But he was a federal government employee. He had a government pension. His wife had a pension, remember, and he was saving for retirement. Just wondering if he was on track for things. And we got to talking to him about perhaps using some leverage through life insurance to because he didn't need quite all the money in his retirement account. And for tax purposes, it may be best to leverage through life insurance. And he agreed. He agreed with a lot of that. And he sent us a very nice thank you back. And I was going to read it. And I can't find it.
Oh, well, that's okay. But that illustrates what you can do on the show is email us questions. And that can happen throughout the week. If you want them answered live right now, emailing now would be helpful. That would be to jim@jimhelps.com. But if you email us anytime during the week, we will respond to you outside of the show. And then if we think that the question is something that would be of benefit to our regular listeners, we will change your name to protect your identity and discuss maybe your story on the air, as so it will help other people. So the jim@jimhelps.com works all the time. You can also call in. And that number is 970-353-1310 or 877-353-1310. And if you call in or email during the show, this is something unique to when we do this during the show, you'll get entered into a drawing that we do once per month for a free pie from Fat Albert's, which is a fabulous restaurant that has magnificent pies in the wonderful city of Greeley, Colorado. And so, of course, you need to be local to be able to partake in that pie. But because I don't think she ships them. They'd be really hard to ship.
Well, they come in the glass pie dish.
Yeah, they're kind of heavy.
Yes, they are.
So,
weren't heavy, you can't ship a pie.
Well, if you froze it, you could. Packed it in dry ice, you could.
Yeah.
But then it's not going to be the same. So we're going to restrict that just to local people who can drive over and pick it up.
Yeah.
And so we take all the callers and emailers during our show during the month and put them into this drawing. So there is incentive to give us a call, especially during the first half hour between 8 and 8:30, which is local time here in lovely Greeley, Colorado.
What we could do for our out-of-state listeners, we could put them in the pie drawing, and if they win, we can ask them what type of pie would you have chosen, and then we all can get it and send them photos of us eating the pie and letting them know how good it was.
Oh, I like that idea.
With tasting notes?
Yes.
Yes. Mm. We can describe.
You could do that. We could also maybe engage with a national pie supplier, and we could send them a coupon for a pie from, I don't know, Perkins or something. That's everywhere. Aren't those everywhere?
Is Perkins going to sponsor the show and give us free pies like Fat Albus does?
You never know.
Well, you ask.
Just have to ask.
You make it up the corporate ladder.
What's Mr. Perkins' first name?
Marlin.
Marlin? Okay.
Or Merlin, I think.
Merlin?
Yeah.
Merlin. I'll look into that.
Well, and with Jim here, Jim would be, if it's Merlin Perkins, we could have Jim go ask because Jim was Marlin's sidekick, so. You remember the show Wild Kingdom?
Oh, Wild Kingdom, yes. Jim was the sidekick.
Yeah, he's the guy that got bit.
He's the guy that got bit and scratched and poked and.
Poor Jim.
Poor Jim, yeah. You know, it's like, oh, today we're going to do a show on crocodiles. Jim, get in that river.
And yeah. Jim, get your leg out of that crocodile's mouth.
Okay, but anybody, anybody listening today, now is a great opportunity to ask us a question, especially since Pete is approaching his semi-retirement phase and then his full retirement phase more towards the end of this year. So Pete's days on our show are numbered.
Yes, they are.
And you have offered to come on once a month at least and do a show with us. I highly doubt you're going to choose the 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning show to come on, but you're always welcome. And so once a month, Pete will be here beginning in February. But Pete is here right now. He's live. He's here. I see him sitting there breathing.
He's alive.
And it's a great opportunity for anybody who has any type of estate-related question because you can pick the brains of a very knowledgeable estate planning attorney and not have to pay him. And that's usually a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with attorneys.
Well, yeah.
Because you guys charge for anything.
Well, that's right.
You know, you sneeze, I say, God bless you. Next thing, your admin's sending me a bill for $30.
And do you have a problem with that? I don't understand.
So,
thinking about you while I was sneezing.
Yes.
So.
If anybody has any questions, comments, or obscene remarks for Pete, you can simply call the radio station at 970-353-1310. That's 970-353-1310. And Pete would be happy to answer any estate planning question. And I know we're going to address something that you and I were talking about in the vehicle today, Pete, on the way to
in the limousine on the way over.
Yeah, a limo on the way over as we went through McDonald's. for those who missed it, Chris gave us quite the history of fast food at McDonald's. But
I helped him read the menu. It's pretty much
I have never met anybody more knowledgeable on fast food than you, so I was quite impressed. So was Pete.
Yes.
But also, in between Chris talking about Egg McMuffins and McGriddles and things of that nature and flat eggs and round eggs, Pete and I did have a conversation on what happens when a parent names a child on their investment or bank accounts. I see this all the time in my office. And Pete, we're going to talk a little bit about that to our listeners because unfortunately it's done with a lot of regularity. And I think you would agree it's not – because the person that was in my office yesterday who had done this said, well, everybody does it. And I felt almost like my mom. Well, if everybody jumps off a cliff, are you? Yeah. And I told her, I said, everybody does do it, but it doesn't make it right. And I think we'll expand on that a little. Right. We do have a caller, though. Do we not?
We do. Are we unable to speak to them? Okay, we can't speak to them, but he...
Well, now we have a caller that we can't talk to.
They only like to talk to Adrian.
Are we going to... Is this a KFKA issue?
I don't believe so.
Oh.
So the question is, and unfortunately, this is going to require follow-up questions, but... How do I get proof of earnings without W-2 forms? And the answer would be, you don't, unless...
Proof of earnings for what?
Must be from some work, because that's how you'd get W-2 wages.
Well, and W-2s are required to be sent in.
I mean, is he going for a loan, or is he trying to apply for Social Security?
We're going to have to make some assumptions here. Well, regardless of what it is, if you have an employer that's not supplying you a W-2, that can be problematic.
Absolutely.
Right? They are required to do so, but maybe an employer went out of business. They're not following the rules. Maybe they weren't. They did some other things like didn't send in the withholdings. We see that sometimes. They withhold taxes from your paycheck while you're working there, and they don't end up sending them in, which is not your fault, of course. What are you going to do when you need to file taxes, which we're getting into a tax world.
Time
so,
of year, yes.
I have some ideas on this, but Pete, since you deal more in the tax realm, what would you say someone should do if they need to file taxes or need to prove earnings for some other reason and can't get their W-2?
Well, you're right. The employer is required to file that, but yes, if it's a situation where they haven't, and that does happen on occasion, I'm sure. I haven't encountered that. But
see, I'm interpreting this, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm interpreting it because the person doesn't want to chat with us, so they're trying to remain private. So maybe they're knowingly working under the table for someone, and now they're trying to apply for a loan, and they're being denied
that could be an issue
because
as well.
They can't prove. I don't think it's something nefarious the employer is doing. I think maybe the person would want to talk to us at that point. I don't know. So what would you do in a situation – I guess there is the employer never filed it and you're running into that issue. But also if you're working under the table, you really can't prove.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
clarification on
– Okay.
She
called back.
Okay.
I believe she doesn't want her voice on the radio because people would recognize her.
Okay.
That's probably.
Oh.
So it's totally,
right.
Totally fine. She's applying for Social Security and the wages are from 20 years ago.
Oh, boy.
Totally different situation now. What she has now is an error in her earnings record.
Mm-hmm.
These things can be fixed, but you have to provide documentation to the Social Security Department. So she's not dealing with the IRS, which I guess that's the good news. The bad news is she's got to deal with the Social Security Administration.
Just another bureaucracy.
Just another bureaucracy. But if you go on to Social Security's website – and you, which is SSA.gov. So SSA.gov. There's a nice search box in there. And if you type in earnings record, there is some information that comes up with how to fix errors on your earnings record. And of course, they're not just going to take your word for it. If when applying for – my guess is what happened 20 years ago. She worked somewhere and now she's in applying and they pulled up her earnings record and she's saying, well, back in whatever 20 years ago was –
it'll be the 80s.
You know, 1994.
90s.
96. I worked. I had a job and you're showing me with no wages that year and that's wrong. They're going to need something that can be pay stubs, which from 20 years ago, I don't know. It could be if – You could make an argument maybe if you could clearly show deposits that were made into some kind of – with bank statements on a regular basis.
Well, the
from
error
an employer
also, Chris, though, could be she may have it right on her tax return and it was just recorded wrong by the Social Security Administration.
Absolutely.
So, Pete, how do you go about getting an old tax return? I know there is a way. You have to file for a history or something like that?
Yeah, you can apply to the IRS. They have a form for it for a transcript because they don't have copies
transcripts, right,
of the tax returns. My experience is that the first response that she'll get for something 20 years ago is, we don't have it. And then you'll have to go and see if they can pull a record. And quite honestly, I have not done that. I don't know what the process is.
I would
is.
Also go to the employer.
If they still exist.
If they still mm-hmm. exist, and they very well could, mm-hmm. because I know – I mean, I've had my own business now for 16 years, and if an employee came to me and said, what did you pay me 8 years ago, I'm sure a bookkeeper could find that. Mm-hmm. So there's many ways. It sounds to me like it could be an issue where the IRS just – either reported it to Social Security Administration wrong or the Social Security Administration got it wrong. I believe we blogged on this in the past, didn't we?
We have talked about on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com about errors in your earnings history. And where we blogged about it was warning people to check their earnings record
every
regularly.
Every year, yes.
Every year or two, because it's a lot easier to fix a problem from a year or two ago than from 20 years ago. It's too late, of course, for her. She's just facing the situation now, and there unfortunately may not be a solution if there's absolutely no record.
One other thing I want to add, she may also be misunderstanding this. Even if you got your tax return shows all sources of income in a given year. It is only W-2 wages and wages that were subject to Social Security taxation that actually go into your calculation. It is not the gross wages that you're declaring on your tax return, because distributions from a retirement account, capital gains, the sales of any type of collectible, none of that is subject to Social Security taxation, yet it goes on your tax return. So a lot of times, Pete, we run into situations where people say, oh, I made more than that. But they're looking at all these different types of income sources that are not taxed. They may be taxed as income. A distribution from an IRA is taxed as income, but it doesn't increase your Social Security. So again, 20 years ago, she may have had different types of income, Chris, more likely than not a capital gain. Or some type of maybe passive income, Pete, that wasn't subject to Social Security taxation. And she's just thinking, my God, I had much more money on my tax returns back then, and it's not showing up. It's only those W-2 earnings that were subject to Social Security withholdings are actually going to apply.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, we're making a lot of assumptions here and kind of trying to cover a lot of bases, not knowing exactly the story. If she wants to stay anonymous, whoever this is who posed this question, if you want to contact Jim or I directly, I'd be happy to chat with you for a few minutes on it and maybe hear – if I hear a little more detail about your issue,
it might bring to light
a little more appropriately to a solution if there is one. If may not be one, but if we could hear a little more, go back and forth with a little Q&A for 5 minutes, there might
right.
be a way
so the
for
best
to
way
help
to
you.
Do that will be to reach out to us at the office. You can call us at 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. Or send an email either to jim@jimhelps.com or chris@jimhelps.com.
Yes.
Either way, we can chat a little bit more about this. But I think one of the big things that a lot of people, when they look at their earnings history, which is, again, one reason why we recommend people, even in their 30s and 40s, go and make an account at Social Security, ssa.gov, or just Google Social Security is the first thing that pops up is the government's website. Create an account there, and every year you can log on and see what they're reporting as your earnings. and just make sure it matches. Because if there's a problem with W-2 income, it's easy to nip it in the bud now than later. But also recognize it's not the total earnings on your tax return. Or if you're filing a joint return and you're just thinking, oh my God, we paid a lot more in taxes that year. Well, you have your income and your spouse's income. That is separated on the Social Security earnings report. It's not put all on one spouse. So a lot of times when they look at their earnings history, Chris, people get confused because they don't understand it's not all earnings.
Right. Although 90% of people, the only earnings they have on their 1040
true, but you
are
run
wages,
into those but, where there's there's differences.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want people to know that sometimes you're going to look on it and it's not going to quite match up your tax return. And asking the IRS for a history or an old tax return, again, you can't go by the gross income that was on that tax return. You have to look at what comprised that gross income, and it's only going to be the W-2 wages subject to Social Security taxation.
And self-employment income.
And self-employment income, correct.
Yep. Right. Yep.
All right.
Good.
Well, thanks for the call. We didn't get to speak with them. I'm sure they were lovely, though.
Yes.
So it was a voice we'd recognize. Wonder if it
was
a movie
star. I don't
know
about that. No, I think it's listeners. Her friends might listen to the show, and she just didn't want to.
Well, we could fantasize that it was some famous movie star.
It could be. Yes. Very well could be.
Yes. A lot of them are around here.
Listening to the show.
Yeah.
We're on the internet.
Right now?
Yes, we are.
We're live streaming.
Yeah, live streaming right off KFKA. Mm-hmm. So that could have been Sandra Bullock.
I don't think she's Social Security age yet.
She might be checking her earnings history.
Following your advice. I'm sure she follows your advice.
Well, Sandra, if you're listening, yes, I'm free tonight. You can't say that because you're married.
I'm not free tonight.
Right. I am.
Nor tomorrow night.
So if Sandra needs something to do, I'll take it to the movies.
Or you can go walking up and down the Pearl Street Mall and
looking for the Boston bar.
Yeah. I think she's a Texas fan, though, of some team probably in Texas.
Why was she
a
Texas
fan? She's from Austin.
Fan? Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, for her, I'd become a Cowboys fan.
Well, good to know.
To heck with the Patriots. Tom, you're out of here.
Right.
Romo, come on board.
So, with that, we are at the bottom of the hour, which means it's time for our first break. What do we do on breaks? Oh, we have a little thing with a song.
Yes.
So when we come back from the break, we are going to hear a very popular song from 1935, which happens to be the year Social Security started. And coming up next, this popular song with a long title has become a great American songbook standard. That's not much of a hint. It has a long title from 1935 and has become a great American songbook standard. So that means we're all going to recognize it.
We hope.
Most of us. Jim?
I may.
Okay. So we'll find out looking at it, I can see it now.
Oh, you have the answer in front of you.
I have the answer in front of me. It is quite a long title.
And do you recognize the song?
I do.
Okay.
I think you all do. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you right after this short break.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter. And make believe it came from you. I'm gonna write words oh so sweet. They're gonna knock me off.
Good morning and welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs from 1935. As we look back in the history of Social Security, that's the year that Social Security started. That's also the year that I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter by Fats Waller came out. It's been featured in the Broadway musical Ain't Misbehavin'.
Mm-hmm.
It's been re-recorded by many artists, including Nat King Cole, Barry Manilow, Dean Martin, Willie Nelson, and Paul McCartney as recently as 2012.
Wow.
I don't know who did it in 2012. That's pretty recent. I haven't heard that one.
Paul McCartney, you just said.
I don't know if he's the one who did it in 2012. Could have been Willie Nelson.
We know Nat King Cole didn't do it in 2012.
He did not.
No.
Barry, though. Barry Manilow's still alive, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Barry could have done it. Fascinating. Had you heard that before, Jim?
Negative.
Really?
You haven't heard the song before?
I don't believe so, no.
Really? Wow.
I don't really listen to 1935 songs.
Well, you can go. You should watch the musical, Ain't Misbehavin'.
I haven't seen it.
I know. That's why I said should. You should see it. It's a popular American standard.
All right.
And a famous musical.
I'll put it on my list of things to do.
Well, and his first name's Fats. I always like that. There's not many famous Fats. There's Fats Domino.
Yeah.
Fats Waller. Fats McGee.
Fatso.
I think that's a local Boston deal.
Is he an Oriental guy? Fatso?
No, that's their last name's Fat.
Oh, I see.
That would be so fat.
And it's spelled with a PH instead of a.
Right, yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, this show has degraded to new levels. So if anybody is listening,
if anyone's listening,
please call.
Still listening.
We do the songs as a lead up to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
I better have that update ready.
Have that ready to go because we'll do that in the fourth segment.
Okay.
So the reason we start with 1935 is that's the first year that Social Security came about. In our next segment, we're going to look at the number one song 40 years ago this week. That's our nod to Social Security's original calculation that used what is called 40 elapsed years. That's how they used to determine Social Security in the 1930s, 40s, and early 50s when it first came out. And then as a nod to how Social Security is determined today, they use what is called 35 computation years. So in the top of the fourth segment, we're going to look back to the number one song in America 35 years ago. And Chris will give us a summary on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, the blog that he and I have had for a little over the past year and a half. And has been very well received,
I think
would say.
We're at 20 months now.
Yeah, it'll be 24 months. It'll be 1 year on your birthday, April 1st. Mm-hmm. April 1st is when we launched it 2 years ago. So the two-year anniversary is going to be real important. It'll be nice, and it'll be the kickoff of a new blog.
Pardon?
I haven't told you that part yet.
A new Social Security blog or a new
blog? No, a new blog.
Oh, a brand new blog.
New blog, new topic, new idea. We'll keep Social Security one going as well.
Oh, of course we will.
Relax. I'm going to sign this to Justin and Andrew.
Oh.
They don't know it yet. They don't listen to the show, so
they should
we're
come,
safe.
They should come to the show just to get updates on what they're required to do at work.
So there will be a new blog coming out.
Oh, it'll fascinating.
It'll take a couple of months to get the programming in. It'll cover another segment of
we can't talk
retirement
about it.
Planning. Well, I don't have the website reserved yet, so I don't want to give it away.
Oh,
okay.
I have to get it.
Got it. Good. It'll be exciting, though.
Yes.
It will be. And I think Justin, who is one of the junior admins in the office, working his way up towards wanting to become a planner, and Deb in the office, Deb is leaving. So our current receptionist is leaving. So Justin had met a young guy, his age, Justin's age, who has been working in the industry for just a year, and he's going to be coming on. He will be doing some of the administrative brokerage work on the brokerage side, being an admin there. And as you and I have talked about, Chris, he'll be on a two-year track to teaching him and grooming him to hopefully become a planner someday. So we'll have two junior admins, and I'll probably have them do most of the blogging on that. I think it'll be a good way for them to get their knowledge out there. So they don't know all this yet, but that's coming.
Excellent for them.
They don't listen.
I'm happy for them.
They're in their early 30s. They don't listen to what's going on.
So we are live this morning as we answered that question in the previous segment. Although it is, I will admit, it's a little more engaging for us to speak to them live on the radio. So I would encourage anyone to call who has a question on Social Security, their 401k, government pension plans of any types, PARA here in Colorado, FERS, CSRS, all of the variety of popular pension plans. We've dealt a little bit with pension plans in other states as well. I wouldn't claim to be experts on those, but
not at all.
A lot of them function similarly to what we've got here in Colorado. If we don't know, we'll tell you.
And then we'll find the answer.
And then we'll find the answer
a few weeks ago.
Right. So the phone number to call, 970-353-1310, or 877-353-1310. And as Jim mentioned before, this is a prime opportunity, one of the last opportunities probably for a while, to get live, free advice from
a living,
Peter
breathing
Scott,
attorney.
A living, yes. breathing estate planning attorney.
Yes, an opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah, you're right. Many lifetimes. And yeah, I think we should try to get you a question, Peter.
Well, what I do want to talk about is what we were talking about in between Chris's tirade on.
It was not a tirade.
Your fast food.
I was informing you. You had questions. I had answers.
No, you just rambled.
I did?
I was impressed. I will admit, you were impressed too.
I was. It was nice listening to
his
a food show.
Knowledge, yes. of the McDonald's menu. Yes. I think if I was to ever fire you, you could get another job
future.
At McDonald's. That's absolutely. McDonald's would be a fool not to hire somebody with such knowledge of their menu.
Or he could start his own radio show as a food critic on McDonald's fast food.
He could. Yes. I mean,
I don't eat
I understand
McDonald's that
you've
much.
Got. No,
I frequent
you do.
Their breakfast. So I have intimate knowledge of their breakfast menu.
An yes. amazing amount of intimate knowledge.
Yeah. It's all that information is available on the
menu board.
Menu board. You just have to see it enough times, and I think you'd become an expert as well.
No, you knew it all. You knew the exact kind of egg I was going to get on this McGriddle thing, and you told me in between window one and window two that I was going to get a square egg instead of my round egg, mm-hmm. and
you could get Canadian bacon.
And I could get Canadian bacon, and just in time, I had the person at the window change my order. So without your knowledge, I would have been eating bacon instead of Canadian bacon.
Thank you.
I was touched.
That's very nice.
But in between all that, Pete, I wanted
my wife isn't listening.
Talk to you. A person was in the office recently, and I get this all the time. So I'm hoping our listeners local and live here in Northern Colorado, as they painstakingly search for their phones to call us, paying attention and listening. But also I hope our iTunians pay attention to this, because I see it all the time. And mostly because all's what we do in our office is retirement planning. So we deal a lot with people in later stages, and we see it's mostly parents doing it with children, and what they do, the parent will name one or more. The latest case I've seen, the parent named three children as co-owners on their bank accounts and investment accounts, not their IRAs, 401ks, and other type of retirement accounts. They cannot be owned jointly.
But they probably would if they were
allowed. If they could, yes. If they could, they would do it.
Following their thought process,
right.
They are doing that out of a certain amount of convenience, which is true. You gain some convenience by doing this, but expose yourself to
risks. You run into problems, and that's why they do it. The elderly person – excuse me. The elderly person in question, the latest one, named his three siblings as
– Children.
Children. Sorry. What did I say?
Siblings.
Oh, I meant to say
children.
Offspring.
Offspring. Okay. Yeah. That would be accurate as well.
Yeah, yeah. Pulled that out of nowhere. But he named his three children on his checking account, savings account, and investment account. Mm-hmm. And the reason he put them on the investment account is it would be easier for the children to take the money from the investment account, move it to a savings account, and then from the savings account, move it to his checking account. And all the children could also write checks and help him. The gentleman was living in an assisted living facility and needed this type of assistance. And when the person I was chatting with was telling me all this, I started cringing again. And I went on to explain and say to them, gee, I hope your brothers and sisters have good marriages and are not being sued or declaring bankruptcy. And this person wanted to know why. And I went on to explain that when you name someone as just a regular joint owner, we're not talking tenants in common, we're talking joint ownership. All four of you now, your dad and the three children, essentially all own 100% of that account. And I said, if there is a divorce or a bankruptcy or a creditor, issue. You're being sued for something. You run over Peyton Manning's toe and he can't play tomorrow, and you're being sued. The assets that your dad has can now be attached. And they didn't really think that that was true. And I said it is. And I want you to expand on that, Pete.
Well, when you set up, especially with bank accounts, investment accounts, the joint ownership means that any one of – first of all of you own the account. And also any one of you can withdraw 100% of that account without the consent of the other owners.
Even if the other three never put one dime in.
That's correct.
And that's what I tried to tell them. It doesn't matter that the money was all your dad's. The minute you all became joint owners, it's all of yours.
Well, that's true. And so as well, they don't own it until it's withdrawn, and either one of – technically.
Correct.
But any one of them can withdraw 100%, and that's what opens the door to creditors, because they step into the shoes of the debtor, and if the debtor can access 100%, so can the creditor. Very dangerous. Unfortunately, it's done all too often. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what we recommend is that if they do want the kids to have access to the accounts, Kurt, you know, it's very often the older generation is concerned about capacity and being able to access the funds for their care. You can name the children, at least with bank accounts, as an additional signer on the account, which means that they can access the money, but they don't own it, and their creditors can't access it because they can't withdraw it for their own purposes. They have to use it for the account owner. And so that's another way around it if they want to do that.
So the simple accounts, the savings and checking accounts, that would be a clean, basic, easy, inexpensive, because there's no cost to
right.
this, way of giving your child the ability to write checks for you to pay your bills without actually granting them ownership of the account. That's what opens the door to this issue.
Yeah, and the best way to do that is to name the child under a financial power of attorney, a durable power of attorney, and under that document have the child added as a signer on the account. So now in addition to having them as a signer, the power of attorney gives them some guidance and also some limitations on what the money can be used for, which is essentially the older person.
And that's what I recommended to them. I said, you really can do this with a power of attorney and just having signature capabilities on the checking account.
Right.
I know in my office, I can have Tina, a bookkeeper, sign checks if I gave her that ability. We haven't yet, but I can name multiple signers on my checks. She can't do anything but write a check. If Tina is being sued, they can't – her creditors can't come. Oh, hey, she can write a check, so we're going to force her to write you a check to us.
Right.
They can't do that. But that's what I told her. I said, if you want to just help them become a signator on the checking account, and what you can also do is get a limited power of attorney from the brokerage account. We do this all the time. We have a custodian that we use on a regular basis named Pershing. Some people may have heard of them. They're just a regular brokerage custodian. But they have a limited power of attorney form. It's called trading authorization that we can have someone sign. And it would grant someone limited ability to do things with that account without actually owning it. Mm-hmm. It applies just to that Pershing account. It's very easy to do. It has to be notarized, but we have notaries right in our office. So we can notarize it for them. And on a trading authorization form, which is a limited power of attorney form essentially for this one Pershing account, the person can request checks. Now, the checks cannot go to anyone except who the owner of the account has established as an authorized payee. So we just link it to the owner's checking account. So any distribution from the brokerage account that the person with the limited power of attorney has, it just goes directly into the checking account of the account owner. It can't go anywhere else. That the power is very limited. So in this particular case that this person described to me, having check writing privileges on her dad's account and then a limited power of attorney on the brokerage account to request a payment that has to go into the dad's checking account would solve everything that they were trying to do without opening the door to creditors, bankruptcy, and divorce.
That's true. And what I see also, Jim, in addition to the convenience – and by the way, just as an aside, Colorado does have a law that kind of counteracts that. And it does mean lawsuits and costs and expenses, but it probably doesn't work with creditors. But let's say that one of the kids decides that maybe they're going to use the money for their own purpose. The Colorado law says that when you've added typically a child, the statute doesn't say talk about a child, but when you add someone to the account, as a matter of convenience, they don't have an ownership interest even though it's joint ownership. So either during life or at death, if the intent was that account was not going to the child, it was just there as a matter of convenience, then under that statute, through the court system, you can show that it was not intended to pass at death and therefore pull it back into the estate. And that brings me to the second point, is what I see more often is that people want to avoid probate. So they add their children to the account or someone else with the idea that at their death, then that person has the account and can access it. And then, of course, you know, they're going to distribute it among all the kids, which sometimes works, but not always. Greed is a wonderful and a fascinating thing to watch. and unfortunately, we get to see families at their worst very often. But in you're looking at probate avoidance, if that is your hot button, and Colorado has a very efficient and friendly probate system, but if probate is something that because of experience or just emotional reasons you want to avoid probate entirely, there are many ways, typically beneficiary designations, that allow you to move property at death directly to the beneficiaries you've named without going through probate.
A TOD, a transfer on death, or a POD, a payable on death in the event of a bank account or brokerage account.
Exactly. And there's a bill that's been introduced in the legislature to do the same thing with regard to vehicles where you can name a beneficiary. There doesn't appear to be any opposition to it. I was talking to the author of the bill this week, and in fact, he was testifying in front of the legislature, I think it was Thursday. But so that will probably become law. Also, on the real estate, there's something called a beneficiary deed where someone can name a beneficiary on their home. So at their death, it will pass to that beneficiary. If that beneficiary were to be sued, and have a judgment against them, that beneficiary has no rights in that property until mom and dad are gone, and mom and dad can change that designation at any time. So if the child's going through a divorce, has a business failure and is being sued, or has the IRS after them for failure to pay the payroll tax, then mom and dad can change that beneficiary designation to remove them. So very flexible, very transfer-friendly. Much better ways to move property around.
Than naming a child on your house.
Yes, or on any account.
Or on any account.
Yeah, much better ways
to
do it.
So I guess what we're trying to explain is you do run the risk, the very real risk, if you name someone on your account to that person closing the account, but more likely or more risk would be that person now being sued. Could be, what if your child has their own business and their business is going under and now there's creditors going after the child and the business? They could get into your assets. And that's what we're just warning on. It just kind of opens the door. And rather than doing it that way, there is many – the legislators have recognized this issue and laws have been passed and put in place to make it easy for people. And again, custodians have recognized this with their own limited power of attorney forms. So I highly recommend anybody who is thinking of naming a child on a brokerage or investment account. And remember, we're not talking IRAs, 401ks. The government doesn't allow joint ownership. But as Chris alluded to, if they did, people would do it. But if you are thinking of naming your son or daughter on your brokerage account – to make it easy for them to be able to transfer money and do things to help you, you may want to ask that custodian first, do you have, it's called trading authorization, or sometimes they'll just call it a limited power of attorney, do you have a form that I can use so my son or daughter can help me, but it doesn't expose my asset to their creditors? And that's what we're trying to do. That's why you can have an authorized signature on a checking account. It doesn't open that checking account to that person's creditors. So,
and Jim, I might mention too, with the retirement accounts, IRAs and 401ks, very often we can use a power of attorney, either one that your attorney prepares. Many of the custodians and administrators have their own form of power of attorney.
Right, this trading authorization form that I mentioned from Pershing works in an IRA.
So that you can give your child the ability to manage or even pull out more than the required minimum distribution if needed without – and, of course, you can't name them on the account, but it's a way to give them the access for management.
Absolutely.
If you lose capacity.
Right. And so the – I'd say the summary point here is there's – the risk, while it might be low, not that many people – run into this, and you could, you know, maybe you've heard of all your friends did it and it was fine for them.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often, but it's one of those things where there's no reason to
take the risk.
Oh, yeah. But there's no reason to take the risk of it happening because there's an alternative way of accomplishing this that doesn't expose you to the risk.
Exactly.
So any rational person knowing this now, hopefully, will avoid that risk. There's no reason to take that
and
risk.
And all these items that Pete and I have talked about can be done at no cost.
Yes.
The Pershing Limited Power of Attorney form, and again, all custodians have this. This isn't something unique to Pershing. They're free. The forms are right there. You just got to get them notarized.
Mm-hmm.
And naming a signature on a checking account is free.
Right.
So it's not like you're going to be hit with all these costs.
Right. That's exactly right.
So we're coming to the top of the hour break here. We've got our number one song from 40 years ago this week that's going to grace us here as we come out of this next break. The hint this time is this hit song was the theme song from the movie Mahogany, a story about a young black woman from Chicago who becomes a Rome fashion model.
I know this song. I don't know the name of it, but I know the song.
Okay, well, probably. So this is
last week.
Right, this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you right after this short break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That's former Supreme Diana Ross with the theme from Mahogany, also known as Do You Know Where You're Going To?
It was number one last week, too, as I recall. Is that right?
I don't believe so.
Oh, really? No, I don't think so.
I thought it was.
No. No, this is new this week.
Oh.
The next song.
Number one last week.
Okay.
Well, in any case. Yeah, this is brand new, I think. Something I didn't realize, this song was originally recorded in 1975 by Thelma Houston, fellow Motown label
with
artist.
Louise?
Pardon?
With Louise. Thelma and Louise.
No, negative. It was never released because Motown decided to make it part of the movie Mahogany and gave the song to Diana Ross.
Huh.
So I wonder how Thelma thought about that. Maybe that's what started her on her revenge tour with Louise, right?
Very clever.
We're going to cut the banter short here because we have a very patient caller who has waited throughout the break. Let's go to Kent in Missouri or Missouri, depending on where in Missouri you are from. Good morning, Kent.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good.
Doing well. Which pronunciation of Missouri would you prefer?
Oh, I would probably go with the Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Now, you know, Pete.
Since I'm an iTunian.
But you know, Pete is a Missourian, too, as well. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes, grew up in the St. Louis area.
Oh, well, I won't hold that against you since I'm near the world champion, Kansas City Royals.
I see. Very nice.
Very nice touch.
Home of some fabulous barbecue.
Yes, indeed.
So, Kent, what can we do for you this morning? Thanks for holding.
Well, I've been in contact with you before through email and iTunes, but thought I'd call this morning. I had a question regarding use of extra money outside of what you can put into a retirement program tax-free or tax-deferred, I guess would be the right term, and whether it would be wise to either do a Roth, open a Roth, or use the money to pay the taxes to convert an IRA that is already in existence to a Roth, and what's the ins and outs of what's better use of money that's going to get taxed one way or the other?
Well, that's an excellent question.
That is an excellent question, and I'm choking.
So as he clears his throat, I will say this is something that we look at and compare on a fairly regular basis because there's quite a number of people, and I will say I'm not going to define your category, but we see this with a lot of people in maybe their 50s, early 60s, still working, so they qualify to contribute to such a Roth, but they realize that all of their money, maybe a huge amount of their money, are in these accounts that are going to be taxed at some point. And when they reach age 70, the tax is forced upon them because they hit the age when they have to have these RMDs, the required minimum distributions. So they're starting to look a little bit ahead, maybe 10, 12 years ahead, and want to do something today that might be a better tax strategy. So this comparison of should I just contribute to the Roth, which, of course, if you're over the age of 50, the max you can do that this year, if you qualify, is $6,500. It would be better for me to load a lot more into a Roth via a conversion and use the money to pay the taxes on that conversion instead. So what do you think, Jim?
No, it is. I need just a little more information, Kent. How old are you?
I am 52.
Okay,
so good
okay.
Call there. But it's actually the one I'm actually thinking of converting would be my wife's IRA, who is not working. She's she would be a non-working spouse, so she can't contribute to anything. I'm maxed out at my work, and I'm a medical professional, so I'm maxed out on that regard. Most of our assets are tied up in my retirement account.
Right. I remember speaking with you in the past, Kent. Just because your spouse does not work doesn't mean she can't contribute to an IRA. She could. There's an IRA called a spousal IRA. I'm going to guess, and I don't want to speak for you, but you might be running into the earnings limits on being able to contribute. Is that one of the issues?
Correct.
Okay. So a conversion or a backdoor Roth would still be available. They're two totally different elements going on here. Now, your wife has an IRA, so the backdoor Roth may not work for her. So I don't want to bore our listeners or you with what the backdoor Roth is. We could actually talk about that on another show, Chris. Mm-hmm. Because she has an IRA, being able to get money into a Roth through the backdoor may not work. So you're contemplating converting, because a conversion is where you take an existing IRA and turn it into a Roth IRA. And there are no earnings limits to that, and there are no issues with the back door. The problem is going to be, and here's where I have to put on my future hat, we have to look at your earnings levels today and the taxation level today of your wife converting as a married couple and paying taxes what could be in the 32% or even higher bracket. And in retirement, will you be in a much lower bracket? That's what a lot of people sometimes will sit around trying to determine on whether or not they should convert. Because every dollar that your wife converts will be taxed today at your current marginal rate. And in the future, the theory is when a high wage earner stops work, they will be in a situation where maybe they'll be in a lower tax bracket. Now, of course, there's never a guarantee on that. And here's where I have a lot of problems with CPAs, because CPAs are trained, very well trained, I might add, on reducing your taxes today and not necessarily worrying about tomorrow, whereas we as retirement planners, we look more at tomorrow than we do today. So I tend to take the approach that even if you might be in a lower tax bracket, converting still has many other advantages, least of which is what Chris said. It can reduce your required minimum distributions, but it also creates what I call tax diversification, which so many people lack. Everything in retirement is going to be taxed. Your Social Security, distributions from your retirement account, any type of pension, any type of annuity, pretty much everything is going to be taxed, short of maybe a municipal bond that you may be able to buy. The Roth IRA will offer tax diversification, and it also offers what I call a wonderful lump sum account. You can take out $50, $100, $150, $200,000 from a Roth IRA in retirement, go on a massive trip around the world with your wife, and pay no taxes on it. You're not going to get pushed into a higher bracket. You're not going to have any issues. So converting could work. I'm not against converting. Are you still there, Kent?
Yep, I'm okay. Here. I'm listening.
Okay, we had a little bit of noise background. But you can easily convert. I would just pay attention to your tax bucket. Try to stay within your current bucket, not use the conversion to push you into a higher marginal rate, and take advantage on getting money into a Roth. There's other advantages to it because I think they're going to close the backdoor Roth. I think they're going to Obama tried in his last – I'm not trying to be political here, but in his last budget, he did propose several things, one of which Chris and I have blogged on repeatedly that did pass, major changes to Social Security. There's two other major changes in his budget that we haven't spoken about but that apply directly to you, Kent. He wants to close the ability to do a backdoor Roth conversion
contribution
by saying the only money that can be converted into a Roth IRA is pre-tax money. Post-tax IRA contributions will not be convertible under the president's proposal. The second thing he wants to do is abolish the stretch IRA. And this is crucial. With beneficiary designations, or if you have any children, especially children with special needs. And right. The issue is, if they abolish the stretch IRA, a non-spouse beneficiary is going to be forced to close the IRA within 5 years of the death of the owner. Currently, they can stretch it out over the lifetime of the child. The reason they want to do this is simple. Puts a heck of a lot more money in their pocket. If you leave a $1 million IRA to a child and they have to close it within 5 years, if the child waits to the fifth year and closes it, government's going to walk away with 40%+ of that. Even if the child takes out 20% a year for 5 years, that's $200,000 of extra income, government's going to walk away with a third of it. If they can stretch it out, government doesn't get very much of it. This has bipartisan support. It passed the Republican Congress last year. It was the Democrat Senate that killed it. So I think this is going to see the light of day within the next few years. In fact, I'm planning a show with Pete. He doesn't know this yet. I don't know if he's paying attention. He's sitting right there. Because I was going to talk about cruts and crats, Pete,
okay,
and how we can use those if they get rid of the backdoor IRA. So I know that kind of gets off base here a little, Kent, but there could be a lot of advantages to you and your wife now getting money into a Roth because you might be prevented later. And getting the money into the Roth now is going to improve your ability, whether you and your wife want to use it as a lump sum account or whether you want to use it to leave to a child.
Yeah, and I would generally agree with what Jim said. Paying, really, the one caveat is looking at, see if you can do a reasonable job anticipating your current marginal rate versus the marginal rate when you retire. If you believe there's going to be a significant difference between the two, that you will actually drop into a lower marginal tax bracket in retirement, then you're going to have to weigh the advantages of getting money into the Roth, which there's quite a number of we've discussed on many shows, versus paying a little bit extra in taxes to put the money, to get the money out of the traditional IRA. If it's a wash.
When I've looked at that, it doesn't seem like I actually drop down much.
And most people don't.
Yeah, most people don't.
Most people don't. I think it's a fallacy. And there was maybe a time where when people would retire, they would find themselves in a lower tax bracket. So the thought process was, don't pay tax now, defer it, and you'll be charged a lower tax rate. Well, the way people have their savings these days, mostly in deferred accounts, it now creates a huge amount of taxable income in retirement, and they find themselves not dropping into a much lower standard of living because they've got to withdraw enough out of these taxed accounts in order to maintain the standard that they got used to before they retired, and they find themselves in exactly the same tax bracket they were in before.
So I have no problem with you converting, Kent, for all those reasons. It's not you don't let the tax dog wag the tail of the something or
tax
other.
Tail wag
tax
the
tail
dog.
Wag the, yeah something like that. you don't let taxes make the decision for you. There's too many moving parts here and too much opportunity that's going to be lost when a lot of these pending bills pass, and they're really going to make it difficult for people with your means, for people of your level of success and knowledge, to be able to get money into a Roth IRA. They're going after it. They're going to close the backdoor Roth. They're going to force the liquidation of Roth, any type of account, IRAs or Roths, inherited by non-spouse beneficiaries within 5 years. And they're going after this. And who knows, maybe someday they're going to put the $100,000 limit on conversions back. Remember, prior to 2010, you could not convert if you earned more than $100,000. So if they bring some of these items back and remove some of the loopholes, the backdoor Roth is definitely a loophole. If they remove all of this, people aren't going to be able to get money into Roths. So it might be right now a use it or lose it proposition.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess my question for Pete or all of you would be, Pete may not realize, I think Jim remembers me that I have a son with special needs that we're taking care of eventually as well. And it seemed like getting a conversion into something in a Roth helps fund his trust without paying without subjecting it to the high taxes that would come from the rest of our assets.
Right, Ken. And the other thing that's going on currently is that trusts are taxed at the maximum income tax rate, federal 39.6%. At a very low threshold,
yeah,
12,500 in round numbers. So, you can name the trust as a beneficiary of the Roth, and then avoid those burdensome taxes that are imposed even on special needs trusts.
Right. Even though you're going to have to close the Roth IRA or your son or the trust that is for the benefit of your son will have to close that Roth within 5 years of your passing.
Now, that's not the current law.
No, but it will be by then.
Yeah.
The money will go into the trust 100% tax-free. So it will not be subject to the very, very onerous tax code that after $12,500, is it, Pete?
Yep. Yeah.
After $12,500 passes into that trust, everything above that is taxed right now at nearly 40% at the federal level. That's crazy. If you ended up amassing $500,000 in an IRA, left it to a special needs trust, then so much of it would be lost in taxes, and that's what we're trying to avoid. And in your particular case, Kent, as I talked about previously, life insurance is more likely the better option to leave into your special needs trust for your son. Because it can be inherited by the trust 100% tax-free.
Income tax-free.
Yes, income tax-free. And if set up correctly, estate tax-free if that was ever
an issue.
That's
right, yep.
So we can get it all into the trust tax-free, putting more to work for your child.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's the plan. I just thought without any way to get any tax deferral on this extra money, it seemed like, well, maybe we should just convert with it. use it to pay taxes on the conversion.
Well, you could get tax deferral if you used an annuity, not an income annuity, not a high-priced variable type, but just a low-cost, they call them investment-only annuities. And the money would grow tax-deferred. There's no earnings limits. There's no deduction for putting the money in. But I'm not a huge fan of those in your particular situation. Because the money, yes, will grow tax-deferred, not tax-free, and it will be removed as income. And it's going to cause the exact same problems in the future, pushing you into higher marginal rates in the future, and if left to your special needs child, being subject to being lost because it's going to be taxed as income to the trust.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons I didn't recommend those to you. You could use life insurance. Life insurance does have the ability to grow cash value. So an insurance agent listening would be jumping up and down right now saying, you should take that extra money, Kent, and direct it into a life insurance policy designed to grow cash value. They have universal types, a variable universal, which I'm not a huge fan of, index universal, and of course traditional. Additional participating whole life policies. Yep. So there are ways to take that money, and it could also be a viable option because you're getting the life insurance leverage as well, that if something were to happen to you long before your expected mortality in your 80s, if something happened to you later on in your 50s, the life insurance is leveraged and could pay out a substantial amount tax-free. So I'm not against using your free cash flow to fund a life insurance policy either. There's pros and cons to that, of course, but anybody with special needs, I often counsel them, we have to evaluate life insurance because this trust needs to be funded and needs to have enough assets in it no matter when you pass away, whether it's next week or in 40 years. We have to make sure that money is there, and life insurance is a wonderful way of doing that.
Yeah, and after our last conversation, I'll have to say it. The thing that scares me more is something happening to me, is realizing what would happen to my retirement assets at this point if something were to happen to me now.
Absolutely.
They just take half. I mean, the government takes half.
Well, it would go to your wife first. That's the
way. Well, I guess I should say if something happened to both of us.
Oh, absolutely. If something happened to both of us, there's a huge problem, a huge issue. So, again, this anybody.
And that's the risk that life insurance is designed to protect against.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So.
Yeah, and early on, the life insurance, the life insurance goes. But now that the retirement assets are substantial as well, it's like, and I still have my term life in place at this point in time also, which would take care of him. But just the mere fact of giving the IRS that much of my retirement, hard-earned retirement money, kind of irks me. You know?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons. Even Ed Slott himself, the gentleman I study under, hates IRAs for this very reason. I mean, everybody uses retirement accounts, but they really benefit the government because they, even though Chris and I said in the previous segments you can't have a joint retirement account, everybody in this nation has a joint retirement account because it's a retirement account between you and the federal government. Because they're going to take a good chunk of that. The only thing is the federal government assumes none of the risk, makes none of the contributions, or none of the decisions. They just take the money. So it's one of the reasons I don't like them. And in your particular case, life insurance.
Tim, yeah? I hate to interrupt. I am actually getting one of those doctor calls, so I'm running.
Oh, okay. Well, you go save someone, Kent, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah, I was a little hesitant to reveal a lot, but this is a physician, as he's just indicated, that I've chatted with a few times. And a prime candidate for putting in a special needs trust, Pete, and funding it with life insurance.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I wanted to chat with you about, so I might as well hit you with it now. I'd love to bring you and Jan on. to talk specifically about this, because I run into it an awful lot. And people need to understand, we don't talk much, Chris, on the show about life insurance, but it is a tool we use on a regular basis. I am not a life insurance salesman, so we don't talk about it a lot, because to a life insurance salesman, life insurance is what you need for no matter what your problem is. They'll, you know, your problem is you need more coffee. Well, there's, buy a life insurance policy. But in the case of special needs, it is the single best item, because the worst, as the doctor was just saying, the worst asset to leave a special needs trust, and he knows this, is his retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. And the government will take nearly 50% of it. And that's abhorrent, because the child needs it.
Right. Right, and if depending on the nature of it, you're going to be subject post tax on the investment account. Then you still have the $12,500 threshold for maximum tax, and then you have Obamacare tax on top of that on certain passive income, which is another 3.8%.
Right. And then you're losing half the money that the son needs with the special needs.
Right.
And that's why we use life insurance.
Yeah.
And what we get people to understand is, and we show them the math behind this, it floors them. And Ed Slott himself says life insurance is the eighth wonder of the world when it comes to IRAs, because mm-hmm. he despises them as much as I do. Just look at the complexity. The man has made a living teaching people about how complex IRAs are.
Well, and the other thing too is when they lifted the limit on the income test for the conversions, they weren't doing us any favors. That was all.
They wanted the money.
Yeah, they get the money that much sooner, and that was to raise money. It wasn't to help the taxpayer.
No. So we're running into situations now again where they're talking about getting rid of the stretch, and this is Republicans and Democrats, solely to get more money out of that IRA. Because if they can force you to close an IRA in 5 years and not over the course of your life, which could be 30 years, you're going to be compressed into much higher brackets, and that's why they're doing it.
Plus, they're getting their money within,
and they're getting
5 years
it now. Yeah. And it has bipartisan support, people. I am here predicting the death of the stretch is coming, but also the death of the backdoor Roth IRA contribution is coming. That is coming. Now, that one might run into a little bit of kickback. I don't know. But that was in the presidential budget as well. And they were simply going to do it by saying the only monies that can be converted are pre-tax dollars. You cannot convert after-tax dollars. And that would kill essentially yep. the back door. So you're going to start seeing the ability to get money into a Roth greatly reduced. So I'm torn here for our physician friend from Missouri in the sense, do we have him convert or do we have him put life insurance in place? And I'm going to say the special needs child is far more important than flexibility of taxes for him in retirement. We need to get the special needs trust in place. We need to get it funded with life insurance and get all that taken care of. And then any extra money above that can go to anything else. If I had to prioritize, it would be the special needs child first. Would you agree, Pete and Chris? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's still listening, or he might be rushing to the hospital. I don't know. But this is a very important issue. And that's one reason I want to get Pete and Jan back in here, because I see special needs situations all the time. I help people put the life insurance policies together that we can use to fund. We help make projections. We have helped listeners and clients before make projections. Chris, you do this all the time with the analysis we do. Can we remove, because the life insurance has to be funded, Chris. So can we safely remove the cash flow to fund this permanent life insurance forever, and will it impact your retirement? So we can let people in these situations see, wow, yes, I can, or ooh, no, I can't fund this policy. And when it works, and when we can show them that, yes, you can afford to fund this policy, leave hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to the special needs child tax-free, so the government doesn't get anything, and still be able to fund your retirement, it helps these parents immensely.
Right. And it's all about a lot of retirement planning and really any kind of future planning is peace of mind. And a lot of times, not always, we can't erase all possible unexpected events, but a lot of things can be planned for and covered so that you can sleep at night and not have to worry about quite as many things.
Right? Exactly. That's what we try to do.
Yep. So we're at the bottom of our hour here. So if you'd like to call in like Kent did and have a question for us, the number is 970-353-1310. And you have to hold through the short break here, but 970-353-1310. We'd love to hear from you. Or 877-353-1310 if you're calling from outside this area. You can also shoot Jim an email at jim@jimhelps.com. And he can pick that up right on his iPad immediately. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago this week. And I'm getting sick of this song.
Hasn't changed
yet. This is like the fourth week in a row or some ridiculous amount. The early success of this song was so strong that the artist was considering doing a tour before his life was cut short, propelling the song to even higher standing. So this is one of those, song that lingers on, although the artist did not. So we'll see what that is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown. We have grown.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. This is the number one song from 35 years ago, week after week after week after week.
I think I know the title. It's the stupid song, I think you called it.
I'm sick of it.
Well, he's sick of it. But in defense of this, the reason is John Lennon was just murdered, so a lot of people kept buying the song.
Apparently. That doesn't make the song better.
No, I'm not saying it was one of his better songs, but that's why it has stayed in the countdown for 4 or 5 weeks now, because people just kept running out in honor of Lennon and buying his music post-mortem.
Yes, ooh, perfect explanation.
That's a Latin term.
Yes.
Wow.
That means after death.
Carpe diem.
Who?
I thought we were getting into Latin.
Isn't that the Marine Corps?
Carpe diem.
Carpe diem?
Yeah. What are you laughing at? Isn't that...
I think that's Doris Day.
No, don't the Marines say that?
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
Oh, is that
or
Latin
Semper
too?
Fi. Yes.
Is that, what does that mean?
I'm not sure.
Oh, you're laughing at me and you don't even know what it means?
I don't know what it means,
carpe
but I know
diem
it wasn't...
means seize the day.
Seize the day is carpe diem.
But we don't know what Semper... Is there a Marine listening who can tell us what Semper Fi means?
Well, now you're making us look stupid.
Well,
we
I bet you there's a Marine listening. We'll get a call.
Yeah, I'm sure. So well, this
we
is
could the, Google
we, should,
it.
We do need a call.
All right. Well, if there's a Marine listening who can tell us what Semper
faithful.
Fi means.
I knew it meant something like that, but always faithful.
Semper Fi?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
All right. Well, never mind.
No. So
we got our crack research staff to
we do.
That
we need a we do need a call. It would be nice to have a call in this final half an hour
half
or
hour.
Final 20 minutes or so. We can have a nice discussion with someone on the phone, 970-353-1310. Or 877-353-1310. We'd be more than happy to chat with you about your estate planning question, special needs trust. We just talked a little bit about that in the last segment. We've got 401k discussions. We haven't had a lot of recently. IRA, conversions. We passed conversion season, but now's the time. You can still make contributions into your IRA and Roth IRA for last tax year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still this window of opportunity for some things that can actually be effectively backdated, if you want to
legally
that way. Legally backdated.
That's the important part.
We look at these songs from 1935, which is the year that Social Security started. We also look at back 40 years and back 35 years because those are numbers that relate to the ways Social Security is calculated, your benefit is calculated. So it's just our way of kind of having our little, in honor of Social Security.
There you are.
We
Your tribute.
Tribute, yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Jim and I have a blog where we talk about Social Security techniques and rules and strategies called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. That's a very long website name, but it's all run together, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And we listen to these songs that relate to Social Security in our kind of our approach to our update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa!
So this week, I blog on what you should know about Social Security benefit errors. What do you do if there's an error?
Government doesn't make errors.
That'd be nice. Sometimes they make an error in your favor. And sometimes they make an error.
You're going to get carried away in a black van one day.
You think so, that I'm pointing these things out?
You actually picked on the Social Security Administration by pointing out to them there was a problem with their website and an error.
I haven't seen the – I have
that
seen
van's
some,
coming. They're have, looking for you. And now you're going so far as to say they pretty much make errors on a regular basis.
There was a Lincoln Town Car with tinted windows driving around my
– That's them. They know everything about you.
I'm sure they do.
They are ticked off that you actually had the audacity to say the government made a mistake.
Yeah. Well, with over 59 million Americans receiving some sort of Social Security benefits, that's a lot of opportunity. Even if a small, tiny fraction,
there's the government, errors, they don't make mistakes.
So I should not even talk about this?
You're going out on a limb. I'll let you.
Well, I've already exposed myself to pointing out the error on the website. So let me go ahead and explain what happens if they make an error in paying your benefits. So they can really make two. They can pay you too much or they can pay you too little.
I'd rather have the first.
True. They're going to find out, though. They're going to figure it out. At some point, they will realize that they've been paying you too much and they're going to write you a letter. They're going to write you a letter and let you know that they've paid you too much and you must repay them. And there's a couple of different ways that happens. You can just pay them a lump sum in 30 days and go on continuing as if nothing happened. You can, if you do not do that, they're going to
kill you.
They're going to shut off your benefits.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
until they've
water.
Recovered the amount that they overpaid you, and then they'll start your benefits back up. You can ask them, and in certain cases they will approve, that they just reduce your benefits a little bit every month instead.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if they just –
You have to prove, though
– That you have no money?
You have to prove that it's going to cause you significant harm. It's not something that's just necessarily automatic. So you can also appeal it. So you have 60 days to appeal from that written letter. You also have the ability to request a waiver, which is a total forgiveness, where you say, if you take this money back, I'm going to be – it wasn't my fault, first of all. That has to be the first part of your argument. If that's not true, you're going to owe the money. If it was your fault because of something you filed incorrectly or misled them. But it'll say it's totally not your fault and they overpaid you and you've spent the money on food. And if they reduce your benefit or withhold benefits for a while, you aren't going to be able to afford to eat and pay your rent and things like that.
But you have to have spent the money on food?
That's an example, Jim.
Oh.
You've spent the money.
Well, you said it with authority, like, and you spent the money on food. So I didn't know if that was a rule.
Or other things.
All right.
No, it's not a rule. But the fact is you wouldn't be able to pay for important things like maybe food and health care and things like that. They might say, okay, forget it. You don't owe us the money back. So it is possible to ask for that. And in the article, I write the forms that you need to file for that. If they underpay you, which unfortunately is more frequently.
I bet you they don't send you a letter.
They do not send you a letter usually. Sometimes they do, though. I have heard of
Gee,
people.
Gee, we underpaid you. We're going to make good on it? No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. They say, we've made a mistake and your benefit's now going to be increased. That absolutely does happen. Not very often.
Why don't they just give you a lump sum check for all the mistakes?
Oh, that would be too logical. Okay. Sometimes they do, actually.
They do. Okay.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's when they fix something retroactively, usually everything up to that point is made up to you in a lump sum.
Okay.
It's kind of like filing retroactively.
Well, I don't want to cut you short, but we do have a listener
True.
On hold.
So if you want to know more detail about what happens if they pay you too much or too little and your remedies for both of those things – just check in with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat?
And we do have Steve from Greeley on the telephone, either a very common name in Greeley or a very frequent caller. Steve, which are you?
Well, I've called before, yeah.
How are you? Steve, I'm doing
still trying
well.
For that pie, huh, Steve?
Well, actually, your pleas of desperation for callers finally struck at me a little bit.
Well, we did good today. We had quite a few callers today, one from Missouri.
Yeah. We had one.
Yeah, I heard that, and I lived in Missouri for a short period of time, I love Colorado, so not there anymore. I have a kind of a question slash, suggestion, request for, mm-hmm. I don't know if you have time to do it today or future shows, for folks like I am that are in retirement now, the issue comes about, some question with regard to drawing down all of these savings and IRAs. You know, in my case, I have some personal non-qualified savings. I have traditional IRAs. I have non-deductible IRAs. I have Roth IRAs. When I turn 70, I'll begin drawing Social Security. And I know everybody's situation is unique and needs to tailor make a little bit, but maybe just some general guidelines in how you go about figuring where and when and how to
absolutely
that's a
much more in-depth topic than we could do in this phone call, but I
sure.
like the idea that gives us something to talk about. That you hit the nail on the head in that there is no, it's all specific advice for each person. Some people may benefit from taking from the IRAs first, some from the non-IRAs, some take Social Security early, some shouldn't. So it's more of a personal decision based on your situation. But absolutely, understanding that how you take money in retirement can greatly impact your future taxation usually and what happens to your money at your passing, if the government's going to get more of it or not. And we see this a lot with Social Security, because Social Security is what we call tax optimized. At best, none of it will be taxable to you. At worst, up to 85% might be taxable to you in any given year. And understanding this and timing payouts from these different accounts can greatly change how your Social Security is taxed. So this could be a very good discussion that we can have, because all too often people wait. People wait to take from their IRAs until they get to 70, because they're trained, we'll just delay. So they spend down their non-retirement assets beforehand, and they postpone their Social Security perhaps, and now they're retired, and the problem is they're being forced to take money out of their retirement accounts through required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half, and these distributions could be subjecting their Social Security to taxation. Whereas if they took money out earlier or in retirement in their 60s from their retirement accounts and let their non-qualified accounts grow, these are the accounts that aren't subject to required minimum distribution. These are the accounts whose distributions generally are not taxed as income. If they let those grow, they can receive much more tax-free or tax-reduced Social Security benefits. And all too often, retirees don't pay attention to these planning strategies, mostly because the majority of advisors, I think Chris would admit, don't really address these advanced planning strategies.
And I think that's, if there is a general rule that should apply to everyone, it's that you need to look at this. Because obviously, the more money you put in, you save for retirement, that is going to impact your quality of life in retirement. What most people fail to realize is that how you spend the money in retirement, really, how you take money out of these accounts, the mm-hmm. order, the simple order that you do it and in what year, can have a substantial effect on your quality of life and your standard of living, because it's really all about how much you actually have to spend at the grocery store and the airport and on vacation after tax, not how much you have in these kind of mystical accounts that not everyone fully understands how they work.
Right. It's what you're left with to spend. Mm-hmm. And this gets even more complicated when they change the Medicare rules. And now Medicare premiums are means tested, and people are finding, especially higher wage earner people, are finding their Medicare premiums are substantially higher than they ever estimated. Again, because required minimum distributions are pushing them into these levels where not only is their Social Security being subject to taxes, their Medicare premiums are far higher. And the Medicare one, and we can talk about this when we chat about this topic, is very onerous in the sense $1 over the limit, and you're at the full higher premium for that bracket. It's not tiered at all like the tax code is. So you start to find situations where people do everything right, they think. They save all this money in tax-qualified accounts. They delay it till the last possible moment, and now they're being nailed because they're paying more in Medicare taxes, prescription Part D premiums, and no, excuse me, not Medicare taxes, but Medicare premiums, prescription Part D premiums, and more taxes on their Social Security.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's more complex than even I imagined, as you explained it.
Yes, but unfortunately.
That would be worthy of some more discussion at some point in time.
And
I'd appreciate it anyway.
Okay. Well, we really thank you for the for the phone call.
Was that
this
your
morning.
Bugs Bunny impression?
I'm not sure what that was. A little Elmer Fudd there.
Elmer
going.
Fudd, yeah.
So thanks a lot, Steve, for the call this morning.
Very quiet.
We have talked about a few of these things kind of scattered about. We could put more of a focused show.
It would have to be a focused show.
Yeah, on these. But it is hard to – it's difficult to talk generalities, because I think what people want is, okay, I heard this guy on the radio and he said go do this, this, and this. And
everyone is different.
Everyone's different because it's not all about just, okay, I have these accounts and I have Social Security. Everybody should follow the same rule. It depends on what other savings you have, what your goals are. Do you have other sources of income? Do you have
You want to leave the money to?
Who do you have any goals for leaving money to a person or a charity? Or there's just a lot of moving parts, which everyone – all that has to be considered in the ultimate recommendation. So even if and a lot of people think of retirement planning and financial planning as investment advice, and this is a ideal case to illustrate it isn't. There is a need for people to understand and have guidance in an area like this to help them, and it has absolutely nothing to do with where do I put my money.
Well,
and what
that gets
I
into the
in.
Problem with the industry. The industry, again, is more investment advice driven. They're nothing. I said most financial planners, because anyone could call themselves a financial planner. Most people call themselves a financial planner and nothing more than glorified investment advisors. A very poor ones at that, who are being paid just to help you pick a portfolio of mutual funds. And they're pawning that off as somehow to be financial planning, and especially retirement planning. I met a colleague at that Boulder event earlier in the week, and he turned out to be a financial planner. He said he was in – because also my name tag said was Jim Solomon Associates, and nobody knows what that is. So he says, what is that? I says, oh, I'm a retirement planner. He says, I guess we're competitors. He says, I'm a financial advisor. I said, oh, well, how you doing? And he said, retirement planning, what's that? And I, you know how I can get sometimes. And I just looked at him. I said, it's pretty much what it sounds like. I help people plan their retirement. And I'm not making this up. He looked at me and he said, that's your whole job? That's your whole business? That's all you do? He says, I do that and a lot more. And I'm just sitting there thinking, no, you don't. Because if retirement plan, if your advisor, if retirement planning is just a subset of the many things he or she offers, they're not retirement planners. This career, this niche that I have established is so involved. Why do you think we can do a 2-hour radio show for 8 years and not run out of topics? None of us have notes. I mean, Pete's doodling over there and Chris is writing names down, but we don't have planning notes. You don't come in here thinking, oh, geez, what do you want to – let me look this up, Jim.
Well, we don't have scripts or anything.
No, there's no scripts. We talked about McDonald's on the
way. I think it's clear to people that we have no script.
But my point is, if we can't talk for 2 hours about what we do, we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. But for this advisor, this planner, I don't know much about him. I had just met him at this Boulder event. For him to say, essentially, how can you run your entire job on just retirement mm-hmm. planning? Mm-hmm. I do that.
Yeah. It takes me 5 or 10 minutes yeah. to do it. How could it be a whole job?
Oh, it is. Yeah. And it's just because – and that's the worst type of advisor. They don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And they're giving advice. And they think, well, gee, I can help you pick this fund, this stock, that stock. I'm brilliant. No, you're just an over-glorified mutual fund manager, a portfolio picker, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, most of them,
you don't know retirement planning.
Most of them have been trained to look at replicating a pre-retirement income. And they make it – they simplify it to such a degree where they say, okay, you make your family between you and your spouse, you make $100,000 a year pre-retirement. We estimate since you're not going to have to pay payroll taxes and save for retirement anymore, when you're retired, you only need $80,000 a year to live on. So I'm going to create this magical portfolio that should – generate for you $80,000 a year. And since you knew how to live on $100,000 a year before, having this $80,000 to live, you'll be able to figure that out. And that is so simplistic because they're not looking at how people's lives change, how saving money is easy. You just send the money in, it gets deposited. How you take it out, how the taxes work with Social Security, when to take Medicare, when you know what premiums you're going to have to be paying, what expenses are not covered by Medicare. On and on and on and
absolutely.
On. None of that. They say, okay, here I'm going to give you the $80,000, and now you're an expert at what to do in retirement, just because you knew how to live your life pre-retirement. I've got some shattering news flash for everyone. It's different. There are things you're going to have to consider in your 60s, 70s, and 80s that you never once contemplated. In your 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Absolutely. I tell people that all the time. We know how this ends. We know what happens. We don't get to a certain point of our lives where we get younger, stronger, and healthier. As we age, as we go through retirement, we are going to get weaker physically, mentally, emotionally, and for many people, financially. We become our weakest as we age, and the concepts of everything we talk about. Look how confusing it is, Pete, for people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s to follow us.
Oh, sure.
When they get into their 70s, 80s, and 90s, they can't follow these concepts. Yet the industry just thinks, oh, it's no big deal. It's investments. Just buy this investment. Take out this money. You're all set. Go enjoy life. Buy that white linen and run along the beach with the palm trees. And it's nothing like that. So we run into that a lot. Steve had a very, very good question. I could go on and on and on and on that topic on that show. So it may even turn into a multiple show thing.
Right. Well, we're coming to the end of our show here on January 23rd. We need to draw for the pie. So, Pete, I've randomly assigned numbers to our callers from this month. Can you pick a number from 1 to 3? Unfortunately, we only had three callers.
Three.
Most of them were lengthy conversations, but we only had three callers this month.
But today we had more than that.
Well, Kent,
Steve was
Missouri.
A repeat caller.
He's going to be.
Steve's already in there.
Yep.
And well, obviously, we can't mail a pie to Kent.
No, but he's in there.
And then the other person was anonymous.
Correct.
Private.
Yep. Yep. So, Pete, a number between 1 and 3.
Numero uno.
Numero uno is Rick from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. We hope.
Rick. No, it is.
You sure?
It is Rick, yes.
Because we tried to pick his name.
True.
We couldn't remember his name.
It is. So. I looked it up.
It is a Rick. Okay.
So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back with you next week with another show. It'll be pre-recorded. But I want to thank everyone for joining us this fine January 23rd, 2016. Looking forward to an exciting Broncos-Patriots game tomorrow.
Go Patriots.
Go Broncos.
We'll see. Broncos.
I'm hoping it's an awesome game that ends very orange at the end.
Yes.
But this is the Retirement IRA Show. JimHelps.com is the best way to contact any of us if you have any questions. That's JimHelps.com. You'll find a contact form on there. Until next week, go out and live life, have fun. Go Broncos.
Go Patriots.
Missed any of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the RetirementAndIRAShow.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.